us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories, fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love. Register to vote. Money ain't everything, but you could buy her a ring. Listen to little blackbird sing. Buy you a record of a young
homeboy by Sunchi Ali. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. This week on the Qumran Report, we will talk about the veterans community with the Veterans Advocacy Connection, Irene Cruz and Teresa Thompson. And at this time, I'd like to start at the top of the show because we got a special guest in here, Walter Fierce.
Thank you.
He had a lead role in a play that's coming up. Nobody Told Me, about veterans, about Skid Row. Very interesting play that's opening up this weekend. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to go into our community calendar, and then right after the community calendar, I'll talk to Walter a little while, and then we get into the Veterans Advocacy Connection.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. Drama Stage Qumran, Full Scope Veterans, and Theater by the Blind, CRE Outreach, present an original stage play entitled Nobody Told Me, written by Melvin Ishmael Johnson and directed by Greg Shane. This play is about veterans joining forces with the blind and also giving veterans from the Full Scope Veterans Workshop to tell their own stories. There will be three performances only, including the preview. The preview is on Thursday, February the 26th, 2015 at 8 p.m. The performance is Friday, February the 27th, 2015 at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March the 1st, 2015 at 3 p.m. The play will be presented at the Promenade Playhouse in Santa Monica. The address is 1404 East 3rd Street, Santa Monica, California. For ticket information or contact information, please call 310-902-8220. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Now, let me go over here and talk to Walter a little while. Can you tell us about what role you play? How did this come about?
Nobody told me. first of all, Melvin, I'd like to say that that opening piece, Sunchi Ali, wow. He, as you know, gave me my first role here in California, working with you and him on the Marcus Garvey piece.
And the other piece, the one about the brother, Dadisi.
Yes.
Dadisi X.
Yes. To be back here, and since that time, I have not worked with Melvin. Sunchi passed, and since that time, Melvin has gone on to form Drama
Drama Stage Qumran.
Qumran. And I've gone on to work in so many theatrical productions, from videos to stage. And I really owe that all to Sunji and Melvin. So first of all, I'd like to say thank you. Mm-hmm. The piece that we're working on, Nobody Told Me, is basically my story. I was being kind of funny when I mentioned it earlier, but it's a collaboration of myself and Melvin, who's a great writer. And over the years, I had experienced personally a devastating trauma in 2003, that where I ended up literally on Skid Row, on the streets. And being a veteran, which I am, and an honorable discharge veteran at that, I had no idea about the services that were being offered, though I had received the GI Bill, Army College Fund, had graduated, and had successfully pursued my degree in teaching. But when I was injured, I lost everything, pretty much. Money, home, family, hospitalized. I was one of those at the time. There was a period where hospitals were dropping people off literally from the ambulance on Skid Row. And that was me. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know what to do with myself, because I had been hospitalized. I had been paralyzed from the neck down, and I had made a miraculous recovery. And I was just lost. But I kept myself busy by just trying to stay involved within the community, whether it was just picking up trash or letting myself being free to serve.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this. And let me ask you this. What is your experience in working with blind actors for the first time? Because it's amazing to me.
Well, it is, actually. It was a long desire of mine as a youth to perform. And as a performer, you're always up for new challenges. But I must say, this was one of the most challenging that I've ever had in my experience in theatrical work. To their credit, they are some of the most remarkable people that I've ever met. I have no visually impaired people in my family. I have had no experience with visually impaired people. Mm-hmm. Until this time, but we've been working on this piece for months now, since October. So mm-hmm. we've built a relationship that is where it's almost like family now.
Okay.
And so to tie it up, what I was saying at the beginning, to how this piece, what is this piece about? It's basically about the story of how veterans come out of the military and unawares of the services that are offered them. No one's going, the VA at the point where I was, there was no one telling me about these things. It took me finding out from hearsay from other veterans that this is what I needed to do. So eventually, I word passed on to me that I needed to get out to the West Los Angeles VA, which I did. And from then on, that was 2005. And then on, I've made, I'm here today.
Okay. And, we're gonna come back to it, because I want to, at the latter part of the show, you know, I hope we have enough time so we can open up for like a little round table after we hear the veterans advocacy connection, and have a round table discussion about some of these veteran issues.
Great.
And about some of the things that we're getting ready to hear now. So I'd like to turn it over to the Veterans Advocacy Connection.
I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps between 1984 and 1990. I was stationed here in Tustin, California, and I was an air traffic control communications tech. So I've been a veteran for about 24 years, and I joined the American Legion approximately about 4 years ago. And it is an opportunity to assist other veterans who have been going through a difficult transition.
That having veterans work with veterans would be more effective, because we can relate to some of the issues that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So they hired all veterans to work with them. So we're like veterans benefit counselors. We counsel them about the services that are available to them, and then we help them navigate their way through those services to get what they need. Mm-hmm. But it's housing, employment, it might be something simple as ordering a DD-214 or getting their ID. Down here on Skid Row, we have many people that don't have their ID. Mm-hmm. So we can help them get their ID.
Thank you, Melvin. In honor of Black History Month, we wanted to talk about some of the veterans who have been instrumental in doing things within history. We have a caller that's going to call in a little later, and we also have a in-studio guest right now. But I wanted to just briefly talk about a couple of veterans who are, that you may not know about, who've done maybe some first with respect to history. U.S. Navy Vice Admiral Michelle Howard. She's the first African-American woman to command a Navy combat ship. And it made news in 2009 when it was involved in the rescue of the merchant ship with the Somalia pirates. And she was actually the captain of that
captain
ship.
Phillips.
Right, exactly. Another one I wanted to bring up is Major Charity Adams. She was the first Black officer out of the Women's Army Corps in World War II. She also commanded the first all-Black female unit, which was the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. And those are just a couple of that people may not know about. But one in particular that I wanted to talk about who is relevant now is Dory Miller, who was a mess attendant on the West Virginia during the Pearl Harbor attack. So during the attack, word came that the captain and the XO were both injured. And Dory, who was a mess cook, went up and he physically picked up the captain and brought him down to the first aid station. Then he went back and manned the 50 cal machine gun, which he was not trained on, and shot down several Japanese planes. A few years later, he did receive the Navy Cross, but he should have been awarded the Medal of Honor. And right now, there is a petition going around to for people to sign in order to get him the Medal of Honor that he deserves. And so, those are just a couple that I wanted to bring up, and I may have a few that I'll talk about a little later.
Okay, I'm
Teresa, TT, as I've been known. And, you know, the whole purpose of the Black History is just to honor African Americans serving in the military. And for African American women, from the War of 1812 all the way up, I found that we have been serving in whatever capacity that was necessary to keep the troops online. And also, a lot of it was volunteering. You know, there were a lot of Black women that volunteered in the Civil War, in the War of 1812, that accomplished many great things. And so we as African Americans need to be aware that we made a place in history in all of the wars that this country has been involved in. We have a place in that history. And a lot of times our people were not recognized. But one of the things that I did notice was that in every situation where Blacks were considered not able to do, they did exceptionally abundantly above what was expected of them. And, you know, to me, it was like God was saying, I'm going to show you that they're human, too. I'm going to show you what they can do. And they would just blast, you know, over whatever it was, whether it was nursing, whether it was flying the airplanes with the Tuskegee Airmen, whether it was the first Marines down at Montem Port. Whatever we did, we excelled at it. We did exceptionally well. So it's just with, you know, great honor that, you know, we're both veterans and all of several of us in here are veterans. And we have a history behind us. We weren't the first ones out there. We have a history behind us. And in the process of doing the research, I came across our guest that's in studio today and got a chance to read up on what he was talking about, which was warrant officers, which you don't hear a lot about warrant officers in the military. I know I didn't. And so I've come to learn more about African-Americans who were warrant officers. And so I'm going to let him tell a little bit more about his book. He's written a book called African-American Warrant Officers. And he gives us some insight about what they did and who they were. And so I want to introduce to our listening audience, he's retired, CW4 retired, Pharrell J. Chiles. And you can give us some history.
Well, let me start off by saying thank you for having me on the program this evening. My book is entitled African-American Warrant Officers in Service to Our Country, and it was published last month, just in time for Black History Month. But let me take you back to, I think, maybe 1999. I was in Hawaii on temporary duty, and I had some free time, so I went by Pearl Harbor, and I went in their gift shop. And while I was in there, I ran across a book called The Golden 13. And it was about the first 13 Black officers in the Navy. And one of them happened to be a warrant officer. And I was a warrant officer. I said, wow, that's the first warrant officer in the Navy. I wonder who the first warrant officer was in the Army. Mm-hmm. So I started doing some research. And to this day, I have not found out who the first African-American warrant officer is in the Army. I guess it's a secret. But I do know that in December 1941, there was 13 of them. So I just called them the Army's 13 golden warrant officers. So that was in the back of my mind. And I was mobilized as a reserve warrant officer in 2004 and sent to Fort Leavenworth, Missouri. And in the evenings, I had a lot of free time. So I continued my research. And I said, wow, I'm running across all these warrant officers who've done amazing things that no one knows about. Right. So I started writing articles, and every year in February for Black History Month, I would write an article for the United States Army Warrant Officers Association's monthly newsletter called The Newsliner. So I've been doing that since 2005, but then I had gathered so much information. Mm-hmm. And people still did not know who warrant officers were and right. what they've accomplished. So I said, well, I got to go a step further, and I have to write a book. Mm-hmm. So this book is a culmination of over a dozen articles that I've written, research I've done in terms of statistics, facts, biographies, profiles, interesting points about African-American warrant officers and what they've accomplished. It's a 300-page book. with photos and histories. And I just want to share our information about what they did, who they are. There's this African proverb that says, until the lions have their own historians, then the history will always be told by the hunters. So if we don't tell our story, right, no one's going to tell our story. So I just right. wanted to spark in others to think about what you can do to make a contribution so that we can ensure that our legacy as African-Americans in and out of the military continue to survive.
And you mentioned something that you said you didn't know, and you were a warrant officer, and there you didn't know about other warrant officers from our past, right? I mean, you had heard of them, but, you know, not much information.
No, there's not much information out there. You know, there's a lot of warrant officers, African-American warrant officers, that are in the respective Hall of Fames.
Yeah.
That's done just some significant things, and not just male warrant officers, female warrant officers. Yeah. And there's one in particular. Her name is, I call her, her name is Doris Allen, but I call her Lucky. And I was fortunate to meet her last year or the year before last. While I was doing the research, and I ran across her name and what she had accomplished. She's in the MI, Military Intelligence Hall of Fame. And I contacted her, and we met. And an outstanding lady. She's currently maybe 86, 87 years old. She lives in Oakland. She has a PhD. She's a Tuskegee Institute graduate. Wow. And I was so amazed with her and her story that I asked her to do the foreword for my book, and she willingly said, sure, I'll do it for her, but I have to do it my way.
Right.
So I think that's the most outstanding part of the book, and that's her foreword that she provided to introduce and to start the book and the reading of the book for others.
Well, you know, I was reading up on her, and she volunteered for Vietnam, and, you know, she was 40 years old in 1967 when she joined.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, she just accomplished. I mean, this lady is the only female to date that's in the Military Intelligence Hall of Fame, the only woman. And so it's just interesting, as I did the research, to find out more about the warrant officers. And in your book, I noticed that you give us some names and some information about different people, which we need to know about our history because it helps us to become who we are. Our children need to know about their history, that we can accomplish great things. And so it's just so important that they have a book like this to read, because I didn't know anything about African-American warrant officers until I happened to see his name. A friend of mine over at another library had invited me to come and to hear him, and I saw the information. And I go, oh, he would be great to have on the radio show to talk about African-American warrant officers. And so I had to go do my own research because I was not familiar with them myself. And it really helped a lot to get that information. So let me ask you this, about getting the book out to children and in the libraries, what are you doing in that regards?
Well, the book is in two or three libraries already, and as it becomes known and get cataloged, mm-hmm. Other libraries will become aware of it and hopefully ensure that it has a place in their libraries.
Okay.
There's a convention of librarians in, I think it's in June, okay. In St. Louis, and I plan to make contact with them.
Okay.
Because, and it should be in every library, whether it's a public library or, mm-hmm. or a school library.
Right.
I tell folks this, if you're interested in American history, you need to buy the book. If you're interested in African-American history, you need to buy the book.
That's right.
If you're interested in military history, you need to buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
If you know someone in the military, you need to buy the book. If you know a warrant officer or you're a warrant officer, you should buy the book. Really, in essence, the book is for everybody because it is a part of American history, mm-hmm. and we should all be aware of it. And again, if we don't tell our stories and we don't publish our stories, then people will not know our stories. So I thought this was an important first step and an encouragement for other people to do the same in whatever endeavor that they want to pursue.
So how... How did you become a warrant officer? Did you know about it when you went into the military, or did you learn about it while you were in the military? I mean, how did you come about it?
Well, I was in the military, and I got assigned to a unit in 1976. And prior to that time, I had no idea what warrant officers were. But I saw this one, and nobody bothered him. But he was the go-to person. He was the keeper of the keys. He was the expert. And that's what warrant officers are. They're the experts in whatever military occupational specialty they are. Right. They do that for their whole career.
I was just going to say, I'm familiar with warrant officers, not necessarily African-American warrant officers, but warrant officers came up through the ranks. And they are basically the bridge between the enlisted and the commissioned officers. So, as I say, they came from, in essence, they know all the jobs in their unit because they came from the ranks, so to speak. But they're that bridge. They're the ones who can connect with the enlisted as well as then translate to the commissioned officers. So they are very important in every branch of the military.
Unfortunately, there are still more warrant officers in the Air Force. They made that mistake a few years ago, but we won't hold that against them.
Well, in the Marine Corps, we had several, actually several warrant officers in our unit.
Yeah. Well, you know, eventually I got assigned to a unit that had, it was a psychological operations unit, and they had several warrant officers. And I finally met the first African-American warrant officer. And from that unit, I decided that I wanted to become one. So I did 20 years as an enlisted person before I became a warrant officer. And then I did my 18 final years as a warrant officer. And I've met some remarkable people, not just African-Americans, but just warrant officers. We're a fraternity within the fraternity of military people. I got involved with the organizations, military organizations, and I've met them along the way. And I mean, they just have some inspiring stories. There's a young lady here in the LA area that's a reservist. Her name is Chief Warrant Officer for Belinda Lindsay. She works for the EEOC, and she just got selected for CW5, which is the highest rank that a warrant officer sir can hold. And she spent a year in Iraq, and she's a legal administrator, but she's an outstanding warrant officer. There's a warrant officer that used to work for the county of Los Angeles. She was a reservist. Her name was Mary Carter, and she's retired now. And she did 37, 38 years in the military, got deployed for 3 years during the Iraq War, and did duty in Operation Enduring Freedom. And there's warrant officers on active duty. Now, there are some warrant officers. There's two types, for the most part. Those that are aviators. So they do the military aircraft, mostly helicopters. But you have maintenance warrant officers. You have logistics warrant officers, human resources, quartermaster, military intelligence, signal. So that's just a variety of occupations that warrant officers are experts in. And African-Americans have played a part in each one of those occupations, and I just wanted to share their stories and information about them to the general public.
Thank you so much for coming on. Remember, the book is African-American Warrant Officers in Service to Our Country. Can they get it online at Amazon.com?
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay.
Basically, most booksellers have the book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Childs.
Thank you for having me today. Appreciate
you. Education.
I wanted to bring up the Montford Point Marines, because I'm a Marine. They're dear to my heart. And a lot of people are not aware of the Montford Point Marines, that they were the first group of African-American men that joined, that were allowed to join the Marine Corps, but the difference with them that they could not train with the white soldiers. They had to train separately at a base called Montford Point, hence the name Montford Point Marines. President Roosevelt was actually instrumental in issuing Executive Order 8802, which barred government agencies and federal contractors from refusing employment in industries engaged in defense production on the basis of race, creed, color, or national origin. And with this order, the United States Marine Corps was then required to begin recruiting and enlisting African Americans. So recruiting for the Montford Point Marines began in June 1st, 1942. And thousands of them were eager to join and flocked the recruiting offices, as you can imagine. So the first black recruits received basic training at the segregated camp Montford Point in North Carolina. And the quota was 12,000 men were housed in prefabricated huts near the segregated city of Jacksonville, North Carolina. They were recently, finally, recognized by President Obama, and he gave them a congressional gold medal, which is very historic in the sense that because they were the first ones, because they were segregated, they are very instrumental in leading the way for other African Americans in the Marine Corps to then join. There is a chapter here in Los Angeles, Chapter 8, which they're very active and do a lot of things for the community. So I wanted to talk about them.
And the Marines were the last one in 1959 to appoint African Americans as warrant officers. They were the very last one to do so. So, you know, it shows how we have had to deal with discrimination. We've had to deal with being separated. And one of the things that I noticed in doing my research was that African Americans, they had a fight here at home that they were dealing with, but then they also were fighting away from home. And so the brothers and sisters that did not go to war were fighting here for justice, and they had to deal with that, not just at home. So, you know, that makes them stand out, because we always have a lot more to deal with because of all the racism that was going on at that time and the attitudes of the people that, you know, anybody who has made some type of rank, they've had to humble themselves. They've had to keep their mouth shut. They've had to do things to that maybe they didn't want to do or didn't like doing, because if they wanted to accomplish a goal, if they had a goal in mind, they had to, like, I should say, stand down. They just had to be in their place at that time so that they could accomplish their goals and make it possible for all the African-American men and women that came after them to be able to accomplish their goals of being in the military and serving this country and protecting this country while at the same time trying to fight for justice inside, you know, our country borders. So it's just interesting for me, just doing the research about African Americans in the military, fighting in the wars, and especially about warrant officers. And before we go on, I'm going to go ahead and make this announcement. So if you're interested in learning more, I want to give you something that's going on at the Los Angeles City Library downtown on 5th Street between Flower and Grand Avenue. They have African American military portraits from the American Civil War. And from January 20th, 2015 to April 4th, 2015, they are on display in the Getty Gallery. So you can go to 630 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles, to see this. And it's just really nice because you see, you know, This is from the Civil War. We were fighting in the Civil War. So that's one of them. And then they have another one on March 7th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. at the Central Library. Fight for Freedom, Buffalo Soldiers in the Civil War. So a discussion of African-American soldiers' participation in the United States Civil War with Franklin J. Henderson, Colonel, Army, retired Army of the United States and past National President, 9th and 10th Horse Cavalry Association, the Buffalo Soldiers. So it would be followed by a screening of the documentary Fight for Freedom. I just love this because we just need to know our history. And we, you know, the school, I went to school in the South. And I didn't learn nothing about my history. It wasn't until I was in college that I began to learn more about my history. So even as an adult, I'm still learning about our history, just like about the warrant officers. And then if you want to do a little bit more research on African-American genealogy for beginners, if you want to know a little bit more about your history, on the 28th, Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Meeting Room A, you can learn the basics of doing your genealogy research from Charlotte Bocage of the Southern California Genealogy Society. And so we can go back and find, you know, why do I have this? My father was in the military. Was your anyone of your parents in the military?
Both my parents were in the Air Force. I'm an Air Force brat, born in a Navy hospital and joined the Marine Corps.
Okay. And I'm an Air Force brat, and my father was in the Army. And so, you know, we have some history. Why is that? Because I've noticed in when they've done genealogy research and talking about it, that there's somebody back there that was also in it, that planted that seed, that put that in our hearts, where even now, you know, I'm in the service. My father was in the service. Both her parents, she joined the service. So finding out your roots, as you might say, finding out your roots will help you to be a little bit more focused on, hey, where's my interest at? What is it? You know, somebody may have been into acting back there in the family, you know, that you can check out about her. He might have had somebody that was also in the military that was performing. So we got some history back there behind us, and I keep pointing back because I'm thinking they were back there. They were there laying the foundation for us to accomplish what we're accomplishing now.
Do you have contact information on the location or anything for the genealogy?
It's going to be at the Central Library downtown, mm-hmm. 630 West 5th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see. They don't have a number. Okay, it says for more information and free reservations, you can call 213-228-7025 and find out about it. But it's going to be in Meeting Room A from 11 to 12 p.m., and that's on the 28th of February. And so you can begin your study. Finding out that history.
Yeah, doing your genealogy is really it's really fascinating and a lot of fun when you do your own family. I found out a number of things about my family, a trace back to, part of my family comes from Alabama and the other part, or Alabama by way of South Carolina, and the other side is from New Orleans. And so doing research in my own family, I found out a number of different things going back to the war where, if we want to talk about history, someone in my family, they were on a plantation in New Orleans, and one of the men, the slave master, like, beat him really bad to the point where he was about to die. And the women took him and hid him down in the Ninth Ward and basically patched him up. And the slave master found out about it and was going to kill him. But he said he'll wait till after the crops come in because it was almost time for the crops to come. And back then, what they used to do was they used to tie horses, four horses, one on each arm, you know, one on each arm and one on each leg, and they would pull the person apart, and he was going to make him make his family stand there and watch. But yeah. instead, he, well, he did the crops, but then he committed suicide instead of having his family watched him be pulled apart.
Mm.
So your history is very important. And you, I mean, we hear about things. I know at least I heard about things growing up, you know, different things that happen in history. But when you hear that in your own family, it really resonates and it makes a difference in your own psychology and how you look at the world and how you look at things. You have a different lens when you do that. Mm-hmm. So the genealogy is very important, because if you don't know where you came from, how do you know where you're going? You know?
Right. Yeah. It helps you to focus on what makes you you.
Right.
And what's the guy that does a lot of the research for genealogy? Gates?
Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gates. And when they've done research on certain celebrities, African-American celebrities, and found out information. And when I see their reaction, oh, that's why I do that. I had somebody back there that was into that. That's why I've always had a leaning towards that, yeah. You know, because that comes from their
a lot
history.
Of things, yeah, and a lot of things on your DNA. In your DNA too, that mm-hmm. you know, are just inherent of things that you do. And if you want to know why you like certain things, or why mm-hmm. you gravitate toward certain entities or whatever, doing your genealogy is very important. It makes you I think it makes you whole mm-hmm. if you study your own history, because like you said, you know where you came from, and it makes you prouder. Actually, even though they might have gone through trials and tribulations, it actually makes, well, at least for me, it makes me prouder to be who I am and hold my head up a little higher. Not like I'm over anybody, but just hold my head up, because I know where I came from. I know who my people are, and I know where I'm going.
But, you know, also, when you have that history, it just helps you to be focused. You know, it's like we mm-hmm. are the result of the resilient, those who didn't jump overboard into the oceans, those who didn't get beat to death. We are the seed of those who survived through the worst of times. You know, we survived. We are still here. There was somebody back there that stood up for us to come forth. You know, they made it through. They exactly, took the beatings. They took the hatred. They took all of that. Mm-hmm. And it brought us forth. We are here now. And our being here has brought forth more from our loins. You know, more people to keep going forth from our loins to continue standing and making progress for our people. And that's what we have to look at, that we are the resilient ones. We have, you know, that energy, that focus, that we mm-hmm. had people back there that took all of that for us to be able to survive, to come through their loins, to give birth to us, that we are here today. That's why we just have to be so proud of ourselves as African Americans, and proud of our history, regardless, mm-hmm. like what you said, of whatever happened to them, they survived enough to bring us forth. And that's just some strong seed right there.
And to digress just a little bit, because we were talking about veterans, but I think for young people, it is very important, because I get upset when I see and hear young people don't want to go to school, they don't want to learn, they don't want to study. And it's like, do you realize how many people died, how many African-American people died to be able to read and write? Mm-hmm. To learn how to read and write, how many died, and you don't want to go to school? There's something wrong. So it's very important. Your history is very important. It always is. It always will be. And we all have our own paths that we're going on. I always get reminded of the Bugs Bunny cartoon when he's when he pops his head up and he sees signs. He's like, which way to Albuquerque? You know, and I always relate that to your history, because that determines which way you're going to go. So
I was noticing you talk about how many have died, not only in service to other people, but I was reading your one of your articles you wrote, and it talked about in the Vietnam War, 7,243 African Americans were killed in that war. And it says during the height of the U.S. involvement in that war, 1965 to 69, African Americans, who were 11% of the American population, made up 12.6% of the soldiers in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make any comments on that?
Yeah, I did some research on the Vietnam War. Currently, the United States is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. And, we're celebrating the men and women who served in the Vietnam War,
right.
In service to our country as well. And there's a commemoration throughout the United States until 2025. And there's a different organizations that belong to that commemoration. And any local organization can become a part of it. And it's just a matter of going on the website and finding out the information and deciding whether you want to honor African Americans who served in the Vietnam War. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I served in Vietnam 71, 72. I survived that war. And I'm proud that I served my country. I wrote an article last year about Vietnam veterans, and I highlighted two or three African-American veterans who served in that war. Mm-hmm. And they didn't expect for me to contact them and get the information from them, but they were thrilled that I was able to tell their story, and they're also included in my book as well.
All right. Because we need all the stories to be told.
Exactly. I wanted to just to talk about two other veterans. Daniel Chappie James was the first African-American four-star general.
Right.
And he flew more than 160 combat missions during his Air Force career, which spanned three wars. He was in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And there's actually an American Legion post here in Los Angeles named after him, the Chappie James post. And I wanted to touch on Lieutenant Colonel Merrill Tinsendale. She's the first and only black female U.S. Dragon Lady pilot, has recently been selected for promotion to colonel. And what's interesting about her is she cross-commissioned from the Navy to the Air Force. And also, in Los Angeles has a lot of history here when it comes to veterans. Also here, a friend of mine, her name is Sherry Porter. She is the third or the fifth African-American woman to join the Marine Corps. And she lives here in Los Angeles. She's a very interesting lady. She has a lot of history, a lot of stories to tell about what it was like for women back then, particularly just joining the Marine Corps. So with that being said, thank you, Melvin, for having us, the Veterans Advocacy Connection. And for listeners, you can find us on Facebook under Veterans Advocacy Connection. You can also email us at veteransadvocacyconnection@gmail.com. And with that, I'd like to turn it back over to Melvin Johnson and the Coomeroon Report.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Irene Cruz, Teresa Thompson with a great show. They're getting ready to go weekly, hopefully soon. People are waiting on that. They waiting on you guys to come out weekly. Also, another excellent book about Vietnam It's called Bloods. And we read a couple inserts from that. We want to read the whole thing. Okay, let's go around quick for some closing comments because we only got 4 minutes and something to go. Let's start with Walter. You'll probably take about 30 seconds or whatever. Give us some closing comments.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for the information. Being a veteran, I did have a chance to serve under warrant officers. I was attached to an aviation unit. So I am familiar with the warrant officer corps. As far as our piece is concerned, it will be starting this Thursday, February 26th, and it'll run through March 1st. Again, it's called Nobody Told Me. It's be showing at the Santa Monica Playhouse. And unfortunately, it's sold out. But
That's a good thing.
We will be bringing it to the community here down in Skid Row because we feel that that is an important thing to do. And with that said, I turn it back over to you, Mel.
Okay.
This is Farrell again. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on the show. As always, I'm trying to promote my book. My next major public book signing is on March the 1st. It's at the African American Museum of Beginnings in Pomona, California. Mm-hmm. They have a website. Again, my book, African American Warrant Officers in Service to Our Country. It's great to be African American. It's great to honor warrant officers. Thank you very much again.
Mm-hmm. I'll be out there with Lonnie and all of them.
Yeah.
We know Lonnie.
And I just want to say that for Black History Month, that our young people, we continue to instill in them the need to know who they are and to know what they come from, what kind of stock they come from, and that we continue to work at educating them about their history so that they can continue to grow and mature in the knowledge of who they are. And, you know, to know that the military has, we've served throughout all the wars in the military, and it's not a dishonor to serve. It has been an honor. It was an honor for me. It's been an honor for Farrell, and it's an honor for you and all of us. You know, it has been an honor that we've got a chance to serve our country and that our forefathers have also taken the time and, you know, went ahead and served their country to defend this country, not only us, but everybody, every other people that are in this country. And so I just want to make sure children and teenagers that they get to know that.
I just wanted to say during Black History Month, it is important to learn your history. But I want to say not just during Black History Month, we need to learn our history through all the time, mm-hmm. throughout the entire year, throughout the entire decade, and not just only focus on it during the month of February. We need to learn all the time because there's a lot to learn, not only about African Americans, but African American veterans. Mm-hmm. In doing research, I found some that I didn't even know about. So that's why I say it's always good to do your history. And for you young people out there, stay in school. That is the number one thing. My father used to always say, he was a teacher for 38 years. He used to mm-hmm. always say, they're not teaching anything you can't learn.
Okay. And just remember, for your Veterans Africa Connections group, what more? Hey, you got sponsors sitting right over there, right next to you, who both need to be promoted.
That's
you
right.
You know, all around. All you got to do is pick the day and all like that. I would like to thank a special thing, but also a shout out to two of our guests over there, Karen Brown and Nicholas, visiting the studio over here. And I'd like to thank Irene Cruz and Teresa Thompson for this great show. And I'll say it again, we're waiting on you.
We're coming.
Waiting on you. Veterans need you. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. From your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, co-host, Earlene Anthony, May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Homeboy by Sunji Ali.
Homeboy.
There's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us, down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories. Fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle, Dr. King.